Recently, Hannah and I watched the 2019 movie Harriet, retelling the story of Harriet Tubman, who devoted her life to freeing slaves through the Underground Railroad, bringing them to a new home where they could be free. She escaped on her own first and lived for a year in Philadelphia. She lived, got healthier, had friends, had meaningful work that paid her. She had a place to live. And importantly, she was free in this home. It's hard to think about home without thinking about being free, but that's kind of a luxury that we have, isn't it? These trappings of home, however, did not satisfy her. She needed her family. Against the recommendations of so many people she'd gotten to know up there, she went back because, as she said, "My home, after all, was down in Maryland because my father, my mother, my brothers and sisters and friends were there. But I was free, and they should be free." When she went back to retrieve her family, the home as she had known it was different. Her husband, who was a free black man, had remarried. Her grief was that home was not as she longed for. And so she kept longing. She kept going back, freeing so many slaves, following this longing for home, not only for herself, but for others. She brought them all up to Philadelphia until the Fugitive Slave Act of 1850, because that meant all of a sudden the North wasn't even a place that she could call home anymore. And so her journey exponentially grew because she had to go to Canada. Philadelphia gave Harriet a home for a season. It's the kind that we are all called to seek for people in this world: safety, life, purpose, community. Yet, Harriet also always longed for home. She always had a sense of homesickness about her. And she followed that homesickness into a miraculous and powerful life. We all long for home in ways that we recognize, perhaps in some that we don't. Christian faith needs a little bit of homesickness, or it just doesn't work. That's what the author of Nehemiah is getting at this morning. This is a people who had been exiled, and they had now, where we pick up the story, returned home. And yet, home wasn't quite what they had expected it to be. So, home, what is it really? Why is it so fleeting for us? And why does the Christian faith not quite work without a little bit of homesickness? And what does it uniquely have to say into this dynamic? So we're going to look at false home, true home, and running home from our Nehemiah story this morning. False home. To understand this, we need to begin by knowing who Nehemiah is. He is an Israelite official that during the exile, in other words, when Israel had been taken captive by Babylon, he served the Babylonian royalty. At the beginning of this book, was grieved at his country's lack of protection, even after they had started to rebuild. He asked the king to send him to rebuild the wall that would provide safety. So Nehemiah is the story of that rebuilding of the wall. Usually goes hand in hand with the book of Ezra coming right before it, which is predominantly about the rebuilding of the temple. The whole Old Testament, though, could be summarized by this idea of a search for home, or the search for land, the place that you could settle. It continues into and through the New Testament. The Hebrews, of course, we know the story. They grew into a large nation, taken into captivity in Egypt, were rescued from Egypt, wandered around the desert for decades, and eventually wandered themselves into the promised land by God's leading. This is their homeland. And homeland is kind of an existential question in the Old Testament especially. In the ancient Near East, if you had land, you had power, you had identity, right? You don't have a resume, you have a family lineage. Does that family have land and protection? That's your resume at that time. Existential question. Now, after the Exodus, second half, let's say, of the Old Testament, the story is all about God's people forgetting God. The book of Judges is a great example. The first judge, pretty great. Just slow schneid down the rung of Judges. It's an image of how God's people forgot God. Generations were given a chance. Generations were sent prophets. God had long bearing for his people, but eventually they were painfully removed from the land, and they wound up in Babylon, exiled. Now, Babylon, they were famous for stripping you of your identity and your culture, right? They would work to help you forget who you are and become who they are. They're famous for this. It's interesting, this is the context that synagogues began to pop up and scribes for the Jewish people, because they were the institutions and the people who would help them protect their identity. So exile, even, beautiful things came out of it for God's people. But 70 years in exile, our story returns to God's people, 70 years plus some, into the rebuild, into the returning. They have temple again. They have a sense of place again. People are returning. The chapter just before ours has a lot of numbers because a lot of people are returning. And they have a wall now, a sense of security, protection from those who might want to invade. They were back in the land. They were back home. Every human being, every one of us is created for home. We're made to long for it if we don't have it. It's what was lost in the garden, home. We are homesick until we find it. As Augustine said, our hearts are restless until we find our rest in you. It's the reason God's people who are in the land were told, you shall love the alien as yourself. For you too were once aliens in the land of Egypt. I, the Lord, am your God. Everybody is meant for home. For God's people, things were looking up. The trappings of home were all about them. They had the things. They had the markers of a nation rejuvenated. And yet, they were not home. They were homesick. I don't know if you remember the first time you felt the pang of being homesick. I remember it. It was sixth grade, boarding school. I started boarding school in sixth grade. St. Thomas Choir School in the heart and majesty of New York City. We lived in a high rise. I got to ride the elevator down to breakfast every day, which is just cool for a little boy. There was majesty. There was music, world-class music, which really stirred my soul. Comfortable beds. I had most of my stuff from home that I brought with me. They cleaned and folded my laundry, which, you know, one-upped my home with my parents. Sorry, Mom and Dad. They had amazing food. The first day we were there, we had baked Alaska for dessert, which I don't know if you know what baked Alaska is. I'm still kind of fuzzy on it, but it was delicious. When everything quieted down that night, that first night, I connected with the ache, that desire to return to the place where who I was had been forged, this place that had been so steady as I changed over the years, the relationships, the rhythms, the constants through the years. Even though in many ways I had leveled up in this new situation, I longed for home because I was not home. I was homesick. False home. It's having the trappings of home and letting them water down our longing for, our deepest longing for home. A careful reading of the book of Nehemiah will tell you that they were not truly home. So certainly the rebuilding of the temple, so this is again Ezra before Nehemiah. When a temple is being rebuilt, you would hearken back to when Solomon's temple was built, the first one, right? This big pillar of fire, the presence of the Lord came down on the temple, and the Lord was there. Didn't happen for this temple. It was also smaller a little bit, but that's not the point. The point was not that it wasn't glitzy enough, right? You can tell that there's a little bit of something missing here. Some people were happy with it, but the elders who had seen the previous temple cried out, as we read in the book of Ezra. It's not the home that they remembered. Same with the building of the wall. The book of Nehemiah, the chapters before ours this morning, Nehemiah is hostile to people around the town, right? He says, you have no part of this city. This is an indicator that we know something's not right. Now, yes, also this wall is smaller than that wall. That's not the point. Nehemiah said, you have no part in this city, but the prophetic vision for God's people is that all nations would stream to Jerusalem and worship together. Zechariah, one of the prophets, puts it like this: Jerusalem will be inhabited without walls because of the multitude of men and cattle within it. For I, declares the Lord, will be a wall of fire around her, and I will be the glory in her midst. Hannah, would you mind getting me my water bottle? I can tell this is not going to last. Now, this is a little bit of an awkward moment because within that list that Claire so adeptly read for us is Zechariah himself standing behind Nehemiah, who's so happy about the wall. The prophetic vision is different than what's being built up. Things aren't quite right. Zechariah knew something that he longed for all of God's people to know. Home is more than a place. It's a person. Apparently, one of Harriet Tubman's favorite Bible verses is Psalm 119, verse 19. I am a sojourner on the earth. Hide not your commandments from me. She knew homesickness. Would that we would all connect just a little bit more with our homesickness. Now, we may not be running from slave masters, defying death and gaining freedom, avoiding the unjust laws of a pre-emancipated America, yet we know the longing for home. Whether it's like the Israelites, where things were looking up at that moment, and they could plausibly ignore the stirrings in their hearts that something wasn't right, or whether family, shelter, purpose seem frustratingly fleeting. Nothing will satisfy our longing for home to its depths, but true home. True home is more than a place. It's a person. God's people followed their longings to true home. So back to our reading this morning, where God's people leaned into that person. This is the first verse of our reading. All the people gathered as one person into the square before the water gate, and they told Ezra the scribe to bring the book of the law to Moses, and the Lord had commanded that the Lord had commanded Israel. Everybody there, and hear the unified nature of what's going on there. Everybody there asked to hear the law of Moses. Seems a little funny to us. Why would you want to hear the law? Everybody followed their homesickness so that they could understand afresh what this law was saying. Every woman, child, and man, in other words, were there to hear it. Not just, as was the custom, the men who would hear and then go and share with his family. Every single person was there who could understand, because home is for everybody. it is not mediated in any way. What did they hear in the law of Moses? The law of Moses. Think the Pentateuch, the first five books of the Bible. So it's so much more than the regulations. That's what we think when we hear law. The law of Moses, shorthand for the Pentateuch. They would have heard not only the regulations that they lived by, they would have heard the story of humanity made in God's image, who they were and who they were meant to be, their lineage and story. And they would have heard whose they are. Commentators on this passage and through chapter 12 in Nehemiah look at this and say, this is a covenant renewal ceremony. In other words, recommitting to a relationship. And they needed to, because it had been thoroughly broken. Our passage says, all the people wept as they heard the word of the law. Thank you for pointing that out, Julie. The weeping, the conviction. Yes, they worshiped. I love seeing them worship together and the various ways that embodied they worship together. But they also cried. They also shed tears. Isn't that so much of the Christian life? Sorrow and joy. What were the contents of their tears? Joyful tears at being reminded of home. Lament for having pushed it away. Conviction for falling so short. Relief, maybe, at more clearly seeing the person of home through the law. Our passage doesn't actually say, but the challenging moment was reinterpreted. Our passage goes on, this day is holy to the Lord your God. Do not mourn or weep. Go your way. I love this. Eat the fat and drink sweet wine and send portions to anyone who has nothing already. For this day is holy to our Lord, and do not be grieved. For the joy of the Lord is your strength. Home is more than a place. It is a person. Our God is our home. They're reminded here that the joy of the Lord is our strength, is our home. This is the home that carried Harriet Tubman through the back and forth of a miraculous and powerful life. Whether you're in feast or famine, whether you are in a place of security or unpredictability, this is true for us. The joy of the Lord is our strength because he is our home. Every religion out there would say, here's the way to live, right? Here's a law, here's a rubric, a rule to live by. If you do this, then all your longings will be fulfilled. Christian faith uniquely says, in Jesus, who is the fulfillment of this law, who is the God who comes not to give you more laws, more rules, more regulations, in Jesus, this person, being in relationship with him, is your acceptance and home. Now here's how we live as a family together. The home you're made for is more than a place, it's a person. Our problem is we too easily settle for the trappings of home. We look for a particular kind of feeling or a particular set of circumstances. We kind of write out a life ahead of us, and as long as we kind of make our way along that satisfactorily, we think we're okay. These are not bad things, but they're not the things that are going to satisfy our need for home. They can tend to distract us from our longings. We think the Christian life should be a life without sorrow or weeping or difficulty. But this is a relationship. All relationships have conflict, joy, everything in between. So what does it look like to run home? I don't know if you've seen the movie Angels in the Outfield. There's this great scene that I always remember. I don't really remember what the story is about, but the scene I love, where this Major League Baseball player is playing a pickup game of baseball with a couple dozen kids. Finally, this one kid who has never played ball before, but you can tell he's eager, he's a young kid, gets up, he hits the ball, he gets to first base, and then the guy says, "Great, just do what I tell you, and you'll be fine." So his next kid gets up, whacks the ball way far, and this kid's just standing on the base waiting for instructions. And so Danny Glover, Major League Baseball player, says, "Run home." And this kid runs right home. He had no reference for home but the place that he was secure and loved. Would that it would be true for us. Whenever we don't know what to do, we feel conflict, we feel joy. Run home. Turn it to Jesus, who is our home. This day is holy to the Lord because God's people began running home. What would it look like for you to run home when you are fearful of what is going to come tomorrow? What would it look like for you to run home when you are on top of a mountain rejoicing? Run home when you are afraid of what this administration or the last administration might bring about. Run home to the only place that will fully satisfy your deepest longings for it. Follow your homesickness. Jesus is at the end of it. Amen.